This is Agriculture Today.
The Trump administration releasing a new Waters of the U.S. proposal, WOTUS, designed to narrow federal jurisdiction and give farmers a clear understanding of which water features require Clean Water Act permits. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin said the rule follows the Supreme Court's Sackett decision and aims to end years of shifting definitions that created uncertainty for producers. The proposal focuses federal oversight on relatively permanent waters like streams, rivers, and lakes, and on wetlands that are directly connected to those waters through a continuous surface connection. While the plan preserves key ag exclusions, it includes prior converted cropland, certain ditches, waste treatment systems, even adds a new exclusion for groundwater. Industry groups say the approach brings long-awaited clarity after years of regulatory swings. For producers, proposal could reduce compliance costs and limit federal oversight of both isolated and temporary water features that routinely appear in farm fields. Fertilizer markets saw a meaningful shift this week after the Trump administration confirmed that major fertilizers will be exempt from tariff rates, a development that immediately pressured urea values and opened the door for more normal trade flows. Now, according to Josh Linville of StoneX, NOLA urea dropped 6 to 8% on the announcement, easing one of the most significant pain points heading into spring. Now, some key suppliers had been facing tariffs of 30% or more, so removing the hurdles will allow the U.S. to resume sourcing urea more efficiently. But Linville cautions it is not a silver bullet, as urea still needs to trade at a level that discourages imports without incentivizing exports. Now, on nitrogen markets, they reacted more quietly. The UAN prices were steady due to limited activity and ongoing tight supply and demand fundamentals. And NH3 showed little movement, given that the U.S. manufactures most of its own ammonia. Now, phosphate saw the next largest benefit, removing tariffs could reopen flows from Saudi Arabia, which would offer relief for spring, even as Russia, Morocco, and China still face other economic hurdles. Potash, sourced mainly from Canada, remains largely unaffected. Well, farmers weighing whether to claim a residual fertility deduction from face a growing number of legal and tax risk. That's according to guidance from Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Ag Law Specialist Tiffany Lashman. The deduction, historically used to expense unexhausted fertilizer embedded in purchased farmland, has expanded in recent years to include much broader claims tied to the full nutrient content of soils. Lashman cautions that these newer approaches lack clear legal support and may expose producers to IRS scrutiny. Finally, cost of preparing a classic Thanksgiving dinner moving lower for the third straight year, giving families some relief as grocery bills remain a major concern. American Farm Bureau Federation's annual survey shows traditional meal for 10 people averaging $55.18, down 5% from last year and well below the peak of 2022. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Selecting replacement heifers for the success and long-term future of our cow herd.
Parker Henley is an Oklahoma State University Assistant Professor for Animal and Food Sciences.
The first thing I think we need to consider is how many do we need to keep? And if we look at data, it suggests that a cow herd needs to be replaced at the rate of 5 to 10% annually. We know also that heifer development is not 100% successful. So we also want to take into consideration that we probably need to keep around another 5 to 20% of heifers so that we have enough to replace our cow herd. When we consider that, I think the selection starts way earlier than the breeding season. In fact, I would consider you to begin thinking about this prior to weaning. I would look at things like selecting heifers that are born earlier in that calving season. That ultimately allows us to do a couple of things. First things, it picks heifers from cows that bred earlier. And even though fertility is somewhat lowly heritable, I think this indirectly allows us to select for those cattle that have more success at breeding and longevity built into them. Secondly, it better equips those heifers to calve at 2 years of age. The second thing that I would look for is I would select heifers from cows that have great udders and have milked well and have stayed in the herd for a long time. We also, in today's era, have some other great tools available to help us select really good heifers, and that is genomics. There are a lot of commercial companies out there that have genomic tests available for crossbred or commercial cattle. If they are purebred cattle, we have genomically enhanced EPDs that combine phenotypes with pedigree information that allow us to make really good selection decisions. Once we have those heifers selected and we have an appropriate number, then comes in the next stage of developing them until the breeding season. If we know that our cow herd, the mature size, is somewhere near 1,400 pounds, that means that we need to develop our heifers to 2/3 of that mature weight at the start of breeding season. And if we have those heifers that we're going to calve at 24 months of age, we're going to breed them. They need to become pregnant at 15 months of age. So we need those heifers to weigh a little over 900 pounds from that cow herd at the start of that breeding season. So I would consider targeting heifers that have an appropriate growth rate, and we want to develop those at a slow and consistent rate so that we don't over-condition them. We know that heifers that have been pubertal more than once prior to the breeding season have a better success and chance of getting pregnant. And we know that pubertal status is highly heritable and it is correlated to longevity of the cow herd. And so once we have those heifers properly developed, I would suggest turning them out with a calving-ease bull that can breed those heifers, as well as prior to the breeding season, I would have a pelvic area measurement done so we can eliminate those extremes, those small or infantile reproductive tracts. So as we wrap this up here, I encourage you to put some extra time into thinking and selecting our replacement heifers. As we know in the droughts that we have been through, it is important to have cows that are equipped to handle your environment. Select good replacement heifers, develop them properly to 2/3 of their mature weight by the start of the breeding season, and then ultimately cull out any of those heifers that don't become pregnant early in that breeding season.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We finally can stop talking about government shutdowns. After a record-setting 43-day shutdown, the federal government opened for business after the Senate and House approved a short-term funding bill, which President Trump signed into law. The legislation funds most federal agencies and their programs through January 30th of 2026. Three agencies, including the USDA, are funded through September 30th, which is the end of the 2026 fiscal year. In USDA's appropriations are funds to continue current 2018 Farm Bill programs for the next 10-plus months. Congress, of course, failed to approve any of the 12 appropriations bills before the start of fiscal year 2025, which began on October 1st. So many federal programs ceased, and the staff who administer them were temporarily laid off, including USDA Veterinary Services Swine Health Staff and the Agriculture Research Staff. NPPC, of course, is pleased the federal government reopened, funding USDA animal health programs and research to help keep herds healthy and safe. Collection, gathering, and reporting on data and information is necessary for producers to make agricultural market decisions. Elsewhere, a new WOTUS rule might be coming up soon, as the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is expected to issue a revised Waters of the United States final rule very soon, following the White House's Office of Management and Budget release of the rule from regulatory review. NPPC expects this rule to be consistent with the Supreme Court's 2023 interpretation of the scope of the Clean Water Act's jurisdiction. NPPC and the Waters Advocacy Coalition, of which NPPC is a member, in April, asked the EPA to revamp the Biden administration's August 2023 WOTUS regulation that included jurisdictional features outside the Supreme Court's definition and preamble language and guidance memoranda that made the rule overly broad, according to NPPC and the coalition. NPPC is grateful to President Trump and EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin for delivering a WOTUS rule that recognizes that drainage features, ditches, remote waterways, and wet spots or farmed wetlands in fields are not navigable waters subject to EPA jurisdiction and restrictions. NPPC joined nearly two dozen agriculture and business groups in asking congressional lawmakers to continue U.S. engagement with and funding for several international organizations that set global standards and rules that affect supply chains, innovation, access to critical minerals, agriculture exports, and the ability of U.S. companies to compete on a level playing field. The Trump administration had been reconsidering U.S. funding of various international organizations, limiting investments to those that help the United States maintain its global competitiveness. The agriculture and business organizations do agree with the administration that many international institutions need to update their rules and procedures to better address 21st century economic challenges and return to their founding principles. Now, sustained U.S. involvement with these organizations, which depend on adequate funding, is vital to ensuring American priorities will shape the rules of the global economy. Without a strong U.S. voice in these institutions, there is a real risk that international policy norms could evolve in ways that conflict with U.S. priorities and create burdensome or misaligned obligations for American companies operating globally. Chad Smith, Washington.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show is coming December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center. See nearly 500 exhibitors featuring the latest tractors, technology, and equipment. Attend CEU sessions with agriculture experts, network with fellow producers, and find great deals on seeds, feed, and fencing. Don't miss it. Mark your calendars for the 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center.
This is Agriculture Today.
The biggest thing I did in my first tax cut bill, and this also expanded and extended that, was the expensing, the 100% expensing.
Speaking at the McDonald's Impact Summit, President Donald Trump on key provisions in tax law.
But now we have the expensing for a 10-year period. So for 10 years. And frankly, I sort of said, let's make it 2 years because, you know, I want the results to be immediate. 10 years, it can take their time. I had a lot of pushback, including from these guys. They said, no, the right thing. It might have been good for us politically, but it would have been, it's better what we did ultimately for the country. So we have 10-year full expensing. Nobody thought that was possible to get. We also expanded tax relief for all franchisees and made the pass-through deduction permanent. It's now permanent. And very importantly, under our tax cut bill, we virtually eliminated the unfair estate tax or death tax so you can keep your family business in the family, your children, if you love your children. If you leave your beautiful place to your children, you won't have estate tax, small business. Now, if you don't love your children, you don't really care what I'm saying right now. I've only had two or three people over the years that say, I take a vote. Does anybody in this room dislike their children where you're not leaving it to your children? And, you know, it's always blank, blank, blank. Then all of a sudden, one guy about six rows back. Okay. And I thought he was kidding. I said, oh, that's so funny. I'm not kidding. My kid is no good. I'm not. And I said, this is amazing. So he's not so happy with this, but it's all right. But think of it, you know, farmers especially, where they'd have a farm. And you know the expression, the land rich, cash poor a little bit. But they have a great, wonderful thing and a way of life that they wouldn't change with anybody, not even a franchisee, right? They don't want a friend. They don't want a McDonald's. If they have a farm, they love their farm, just like you love what you're doing. But the farmers were dying, leaving their farm to their children. The value of the farm was high. They'd go out. They'd have a tremendous estate tax or death tax. And it would, so much, I mean, the percentage is crazy how high. They'd end up losing the farm in bankruptcy. They'd go out and borrow all this money to pay the tax, the estate tax. They'd put a mortgage on the farm and they'd end up losing the farm. Many of them committed suicide. They would commit suicide. It was such a horrible thing that was happening. And we've ended, think of that, the death tax, the estate tax on the small businesses. So I hope you're around for a long time. You don't have to think about it. But it's a great thing for your family and it's, you know, a great thing for longevity. You know, you treat your franchise just like a farmer treats his farm. You love it. I know you're there early. You're cleaning it. Little touch of paint here or there. There's a little spot on the ceiling. Drives you crazy, right? It's, you know, it's love. It's love for what you do. It's amazing the job you do too. I see it. I go, I've been in plenty of McDonald's. They're clean beautifully. You must have some awfully good incentives because they are really amazing places, the job that's done. But upon taking office, I signed an order requiring that for every new regulation, 10 old job-killing regulations have to be eliminated. So if we put in a new regulation, then we get rid of 10. Otherwise, you don't get the new regulation. In terms of slashing, we slash more than $1 trillion worth of regulations, burdens on the U.S. economy, in particular on businesses and people that employ people. Combining our regulatory and tax cuts, we've reduced the effective burden on franchisees by more than 37%.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This week was really kind of volatile, really kind of bouncing. There wasn't real, you know, trade information to go off of.
Elliot Dennis is a University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist.
We saw basically a limit up for live cattle futures, and then really we just kind of started bouncing around. We did end up a little bit higher this past Friday, but really kind of all over. Things will start to kind of resettle. When we look at just kind of the volatility in the market back to October to where we're at now, the market's essentially dropped about $20 a hundredweight across most of the contracts. So that's about 10% of the value essentially lost in the contract, just to do kind of combination of just basically information coming out and really government uncertainty about what was going to happen. So where that market kind of leads, and if we can continue to be kind of bullish on the market given the underlying supply, I think we're going to have at least support for it in the data as it comes out over the next 4 weeks to 6 weeks.
You may have noticed prices increasing, especially if you visit a grocery store.
Consumer prices, specifically what we're paying for beef at the retail counter, has really become front and center. If you weren't aware that beef prices were high over the last month, you certainly were made aware that beef prices were higher. Now, what that means is, you know, do consumers actually then react to that by not buying more beef? And it is true, beef has been more expensive. Take a sirloin steak, for example. Back in April, it was about $12.20 a pound. Right now in September, it's about $14.30. So it is real that prices have kind of been sharply higher over the last several months. But if you weren't aware, as I said, sometimes awareness is really the name of the game. And so if you weren't aware that prices were really that much higher, you certainly are now and potentially have made some adjustments, particularly when we think about kind of these lower value products like ground beef that's used in a lot of these kind of add-on for people to get protein, and this is where it's kind of the market's kind of focused on. So definitely it'll be interesting to see, because over the last several months, we've really kind of pointed to consumer demand as being the real primary driver for keeping prices higher. And if consumers start to kind of back off of that a little bit, can definitely see prices, you know, continue to remain lower going into the end of the fourth quarter of this year and into the first quarter of 2026.
So what will he be watching for the rest of this calendar year?
At least from the production standpoint, as we go into this fall, going to be looking at heifer retention. I'm keeping a pretty strong eye on cattle receipts and what specifically the percentage of heifers that are going through auction barns. With this, I think one thing we have to appreciate is that more and more feeder cattle are starting to be sold direct transactions or private negotiations. That really weakens our price signal of how much volume is actually going through, because all of those direct transitions are essentially voluntarily reported to USDA. And so at least that's the number one thing that I'm watching on. And then specifically, I'm, you know, on a daily, at least weekly basis, looking at value of gains. Like, where is the value out there to put on weight? Is it bringing them from 525s to 625s, or is it trying to buy heavier cattle and put additional weight on? So definitely need to pencil out things this year and just understand kind of the market situation and where you think value is going to be had in the market.
University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist Elliot Dennis. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And this is coming off the heels of that world ag supply demand numbers that we finally got last week on Friday.
Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading, Chicago.
Generally, I won't go through all the number soup, but generally speaking, lean towards the steady to bullish side for soybeans and more bearish for corn and wheat and also cotton. We'll throw that into the mix too. So here we are today, though, with those markets higher. So what do we think materially changed? And I think there's a couple of things. One is export inspections for corn in the week ending November 13 last week brought cumulative 25-26 corn inspections to about 623.5 million bushels, up 73% versus this time last year. So pretty torrid pace for the inspections, and hopefully that continues to bode well for continued export sales. Soybean inspections, however, came in at 43.2 million bushels, in line with expectations, but roughly half normal levels at this time, down about 48% or so versus the five-year average. And that's because China just has not been a buyer. But you would think that just looking at the inspections number for soybeans would be a bearish scenario, which I cannot disagree with. But we had NOPA come out, and they reported that its members crushed an all-time record of just shy of 228 million bushels of soybeans in the month of October, which blew away trade guesstimates going into the report, which were sitting around 209.5 and well above the high end of the trade estimates, which topped off at 223.5. So we got about just shy of 228, and the high end of the guesstimates was 223.5. And what that equates to is about a 15% increase in crush month on month and almost 14% year on year. So clearly there's an insatiable demand at the moment from the U.S. processors to continue to buy soybeans. And I think that just kind of worked its way pretty quickly into the price, and the market discounted that rather quickly. Now working against that just a bit is going to be the fact that the soybean oil stocks rose about 1.3 billion pounds in October. That was up 5% month on month, but it did stay within the expected range. High end of the range was about 1.325 billion. And again, the actual number was 1.305. So about 20 million less in terms of the oil stocks, but still did show an increase month on month. So we'll need to see how that gets eroded away and eaten away in the near term.
And what about wheat?
If you look at wheat, well, it continues to struggle to compete in terms of export competitiveness versus the Black Sea. Russian export prices, they continue to be on the weaker side and remain pretty competitive. Russia's 12.5% protein wheat quoted around 229 to 233. Per metric ton freight on board, that's either steady or lower week to week. Russia's November exports are still projected at, you know, significant highs, even with a slight reduction from earlier estimates. So obviously competition remains fierce.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.